What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 681 of Flow Wrestling Radio Live. I'm your host, Christian Piles. No Ben Askren today, that rapscallion. He claims he had some travel issues getting from Milwaukee to California, and he says he would be too tired, quote unquote. Way to embrace the grind, Ben.
That's so weak.
So weak.
He's not striving for greatness. That's not Monday motivation.
No, that's not Monday motivation at all. Instead, we have David Dylan Duncan Bray and James Dean Rader all here. Maybe we'll get 20% through the Olympics. I think we got like 10% through it yesterday. So we're gonna chip away at it. Okay. How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a
10%, time. 10%. Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
20% skill.
Yes. So it was 10% luck yesterday that we didn't get to talk about Thomas Gilman very much, and I think. If you haven't listened to the interview, you definitely should. And coming out of the Olympic trials, we knew that Gilman, I'm going to take this earpiece out. Excuse me, bad radio for a moment. We knew he got hurt in the last one because he came out with the blog that he got hurt during the trials. And I think everyone assumed that injury happened in the second match. And then we learned that was not the case and that he got hurt very early in the first match. When he was down, and he ends up coming back and pinning Vito, and then he wins the second match. And he has a Liz Frank injury, which we talked a little bit about that. But what we didn't talk about was that he had three different doctors recommend he get surgery. And it was funny, in the mix zone. So you go to the mix zone and right after they wrestle, but you can't videotape it.
In the arena.
All you can do is voice record it, but you can't like post the voice recording. All you can do is post the quotes. So a lot of those quotes are just kind of died there. But he said, it was funny. He was like, yeah, they're surgeons. Of course they're going to tell you to get surgery, which was funny. And then.
Touche.
Yeah. Take that, surgeons. We know your end game, surgeons. You want to do surgery on us. Well, guess what? Thomas Gilman doesn't have any time for your surgeries. Because he has some Olympics to wrestle, and he's got medals to win. So then we get to get a little more secretive side of Gilman, because he said, I'll let the cat out of the bag, and he let a lot of cats out of the bag. But one cat is like, I think he said Coach Kale or someone said, hey, I know this person, go check them out, maybe they can help you. I don't know if it was a doctor or whatever. And then Gilman starts talking about this guy opened up energy pathways in his foot. And he even kind of acknowledges, like, I know that sounds kind of like, I don't know if he said out there or kooky or something. But he's like,
oh, he used the word voodoo.
Voodoo.
He said that might sound like voodoo, and maybe it is.
And maybe it is. Maybe it's voodoo. Hey.
But it worked.
Yeah, who's to say? And so he, and then, you know, this reporter kind of followed up like, hey, what was this guy's name? And Gilman did not want to get into it. He's like, well, this guy maybe won't want his name out there. So regardless, Gilman, we saw how he looked, right? This was not someone dealing with a foot injury that was, you know, at least limiting him. And
it was the best we've ever seen Gilman wrestle.
No question about it. And I think... One, you can't discount the fact that this guy is maybe as tough as anyone, right? This is someone who he fought through a hamstring injury. I think it was 17 or 18. In 18, I think it was after his silver medal, and he wrestled through that when I didn't think he would be able to. And then he had this foot injury. He wins the trials on it, and then he's able to get something figured out, but we don't really exactly know what. Was figured out or how they did it, and kind of ties into another thing with Dake, where he says like he'd been dealing with this injury all leading up to the Olympics, right? It wasn't something that happened in a match or right before warm-up. He's like dealing with it all camp long, all throughout in the lead up. And then after his loss to Belarus, the doctor, and he named this doctor, she figured it out, and like, boom, it was like unlocked or something. So it's sort of, it's crazy. We got these two incredible wrestlers who have these like, don't know, it's sort of, it's, they seem, they sound like sort of unique medical sort of care involved with like unlocking part of their success and them being able to wrestle really well. So I just thought that was just kind of a fascinating thing, because normally I hear like, yeah, I've figured it out or whatever, but this is a little different.
Well, and Gilman, we have clips of both of them talking about the injuries. They're kind of interesting. If you want to play the Gilman one, Troy.
Knowing some connections through Coach Kale, I visited a guy out in California, and he didn't really work on my foot so much per se, but opened up some energy pathways in my body and kind of helped me acknowledge some mental and emotional and spiritual issues that I've been having, and kind of helped me heal myself in a way. You know, not necessarily healing my foot, but opening up energy pathways through my body so my foot can't heal properly. And, you know, is it healed 100%? I mean, I don't know. It felt pretty freaking good. You know, I was out there able to get a bronze medal. It's feeling pretty good. But I think I just need to take some time now to reevaluate kind of where I'm at and how to move forward and kind of take the lessons that I've learned and really apply them. You know, I mentioned the mix zone, you know, listening to God and listening to my body. So God struck me down and said, listen to me, son. You know, I gave you this body. I loaned it to you to take care of it. And I've done a very bad job at taking care of my body. You know, I eat good. I eat clean. I live a good, clean lifestyle. But as far as training and overtraining and taking, you know, right recovery and stuff, I don't know how good of a job I was doing with that. So I just need to keep taking care of my body, and that's the next step right now. It's kind of going back, reevaluating, seeing if there is anything I can do. And if there's not, then we move forward full steam and we just figure out what's next. But if there's something that can be done, then we do that. You got to take care of the body first, because it's here on low, right? Eventually it'll come and it'll go back to the maker. So just take care of it while I got it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a better summary of than I gave of the process. So it sounds like now evaluate the foot again, see how healthy or not healthy it is. Or I think he said maybe that part or another part, like is it calcified or something like that?
Yeah. A different part, he said something about like basically the reason they were recommending surgery was if they didn't get the surgery at that point, then whatever happens with a Lisfranc, like there's the – stuff's going to calcify. It's going to be basically, you know, irreversible after a certain point. And that's kind of what they have to figure out now. But it was so interesting to me to listen to Gilman talk about that. And I felt similar listening to Dake, because it's almost like they're speaking a language that I don't understand. Like the things they're talking about, I'm like I kind of know what you're talking about, but not exactly. Like I understand the idea of like, you know, holistic health, where your, you know, your mental health and your physical health and emotional, spiritual health are tied together. I understand that to a certain degree, but I don't know what an energy pathway is. Like, I don't know what that means. So that's why it was, I mean, it's very fascinating, because Gilman's clearly talking about something that he seems to know a lot about and has thought a lot about. But for me as an observer, I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't get it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he goes on to talk about, he said, this was a mental injury as much as it was a physical injury. So going to this guy out in California, this voodoo doctor, this witch doctor person, it's almost like how much of this injury and healing and or healing is like placebo effect type of thing. You know, because he realized, like, he said, he even mentioned, like, his back, too. He had some problems with his back, and he's like, those are gone.
Yeah.
Now that he's in a better frame of mind.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's got to be some element of physical improvement for him to...
And he knows that, too, because now he's, or else he'd be saying, I'm going to the World Championships.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the question of a placebo is really interesting, and just like you see so often the way that like somebody's mindset or their you know, just their mental approach to the sport can completely change their physical performance. And you know, you'll see like the Penn State guys talk a lot about gratitude and, you know, having fun and enjoying it, and there's clearly something that they're doing in terms of the mental training to the sport, that approach, that has a very direct impact on how they're able to perform on the wrestling mat. There's got to be some part of that, and then I don't know what else there is, but clearly it worked. I mean, like, you know, he was as locked in as he's ever been. And like he said, foot felt pretty dang good. Like, he looked amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, he looked as good as ever. I'm curious if we'll see him. I'm also wondering, like, how long is he going to stay at 57? Is he there lifetime? It's kind of, you know, I think he's considering.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like at this point in your career,
I feel the same way.
Locked in. He's never, ever, from what we know, had weight troubles.
I feel like he's just one of those guys.
He's never going to say he had weight troubles. He's always going to make weight. He's always going to compete hard no matter what.
You know, 25 pounders are always on top of it as much as anyone. Like, yeah. It's like what they think about constantly.
And 57 kilos is small for an adult male, like, no matter what.
You see in that. Look how freaking vascular he is just in that post-match. That's the next day. He's still so freaking shredded and cut up. He's a monster.
One thing that's interesting to think about, because if he does move up, then it would probably mean 61 for a little while, and then if he wants to run through 24, 65, or he goes back down. But look at the podium at 65 kilos, and look what weight classes those guys wrestled, you know, just a few years ago, right? I mean, Haji Aliyev was 57 kilo. He's in the finals. Bajrang was a 61 kilo. Rashidov was a 61 kilo. Odaguro was, I don't know when, he's been, he was lighter at a certain point. I don't know if his senior level he's ever been lower, but those are all guys that moved up. Like, it's, there's a clear history of you move up, and that's not out of the question that you're going to continue to have success.
And his style does not lead to moving up. Well, he's a guy, pressure, control center, like push, control you, and then single leg, and kind of grit your way, strongman your way to a finish a little bit. I think he's improved a little bit on that. We saw that at the Olympics, but still, by and large part, that's his style. That's his offense, which it doesn't lean itself well towards moving up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think 61 he'd do fine. 65, yeah. I think that's a different strata there, because, I mean, it's just those guys are – I mean, look at Odaguro. I mean, that guy and Rashidov, these are like absolute freak athletes and really, really good wrestlers. It'd be a lot for him. I mean, but Aguyev is a freak of nature. The way that guy can move and some of the stuff he can do, and we had him all but beat. So,
I mean, what would be the difference between someone like Bajrang and someone like Gilman, right? I mean, Bajrang people think about as a little more limited athletically, but he brings an insane pace. He's
crazy,
you know,
pace.
Like he comes forward, hand fights you to death, and then, you know, he pushes late. I don't know. I think if Gilman committed to that process, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for him to make a team and get on a podium, in my opinion.
If we can keep it within 9 with Tobia, who knows what's going to happen? Valdez Tobia from Cuba, who is a monster. This guy's fantastic. Is wrestling Nias Bekov from Kazakhstan, and he's good too. And Tobia is up 9-0, and we can flip it over here. We've got the scorecard. Nias Bekov proceeds to tech him 21-11. Now, that is it was that alone. You see that sometimes in freestyle, you know, like the Brooks Nate Jackson example from years ago. You know, it happens. Being up 9 and getting teched, we've seen it happen before. Pico did it to Jason Ness back in 16. But I've never seen – this wasn't breaking. This was – because breaking is like – some of that is like psychological. Tobier body ceased to function. This was a man whose body didn't work anymore. It was like that Gatorade commercial where the guy's body shut down with 50 meters to go, and he's just like got the wobbles. Like, this is basically what was happening to Tobier, who's really, really good, and he proceeds to get absolutely smoked in a match where I was like, I'm not a big like Nias Bekov. I never thought he was like very all that great, and I was kind of like, Andy Hamilton and I are, or probably just me, to Andy, I'm like, this guy, see, he's not. So Nias Bekov, this is what, you know, when you don't have like an amazing draw, this is what happens. And then he ends up winning 21-11. I'm like, okay, well, guess he's got a motor.
Valdez, two-time world medalist at 65 kilos. He's not, this isn't some random Yeah.
No. He's super good. He beat Zane at the 19 Worlds, if you remember, in a crazy match where Valdez got up big and then Zane couldn't quite run him down.
Watching that on the watch party was so funny. I mean, the look on his face was like, sometimes you see guys and they're like upset or they're distressed, or he was just like, the look on his face, like, this is happening to me.
I'm powerless against.
I remember we kind of wrote it off, started talking about something else or another, and then I was like, guys, look at the score.
This is happening, boys.
What is going on right now?
Yeah, it was that's quite a second period by Nia's back off there. the most surprising part is that Tobias somehow got two in the second, which I don't necessarily remember. But poor guy. That's a tough way to go.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was
demoralizing.
He's not necessarily a gasser normally. I don't know if this is the cut. He's huge. Like, I know he's made 65 routinely. Super big. Mm-hmm. Super big 65. He has to suck it up big time to make it. So I don't know how we got on that, but that was hilarious. There's so many things. That's why we're going to be circling back on these games for a while, because there's so much stuff happened. This was just a small footnote in the overall insanity. So we've got Dake stuff too to discuss with his injury and it getting kind of him cracking that. I don't know if you want to cue up the whatever the clip is.
Yeah, Troy's got it ready to go. He doesn't really say much. He's a little bit more vague than Gilman was. Gilman opened up a lot, but we can see what Kyle had to say.
I don't hear it.
Yeah, I'm not hearing it.
Okay, he pulled it back. Hold on 1 second. We'll have it for you momentarily. No. All right, we ain't got it.
Okay, something's wrong with that. That clip. But
what we could do is play it, and then you could lip sync it and sound like
a... Yeah, we'll do that.
Don't really do that.
but he's very vague. He just says something was off. He says, "Watch me in my first match, and then watch me in match two." And he goes, "That's not the same guy."
Yeah.
That's about all he says, and then he says he figured it out on day two.
Wait, and he talked about a doctor being involved as well, and he talked about trying to kind of unlock something, and said finally actually on day one after the loss, they kept trying to work on it, and he unlocked something, and that's another, back to the Gilman thing about I don't know exactly what that means. I similarly I don't know exactly what Dake meant when he said unlock something. But
well, you mentioned it before the show. The only thing that kind of makes sense to me is a meniscus thing, flipping or whatever, right?
Because yeah.
That's something that could. But I don't know if that's something a doctor can manipulate and get it to.
Yeah, meniscus, where you said chiropractic, something like that, where they snap something and then boom. But I don't know. Dake's not one that really gets into that.
Well, he
details.
He mentions in there he wanted to say, but he didn't want to say, he mentioned, he said a couple reasons. I think one, he don't want to make it sound like he's making excuses by getting into the exact injury. And I think the other thing, I have to imagine the other thing is, he's going to Worlds in 20 here in a couple months, right? So he probably thinks, if I have this vulnerability, I have this injury, I don't want people to know about it, which makes sense. But he said we can hear about it in his documentary, but maybe we'll hear about it sooner if it gets fully sorted out. That would be the hope. It's a weird thing to see someone. Is that yours? Is that my headset?
Yeah, the clip now is
good
to go now.
Okay, you lip synced it that quick?
Yep.
That's good work.
We can play that.
Let's listen to Kyle Douglas Dake.
I just didn't have the right remedy that I needed coming over. Well, once I got here, I had a little something going on. And day two, I figured it out, though. we tried a lot of different things. Doctors here were great, working with me and figuring it all out, but just took one day too long.
Got it. So I know I can tell you're not wanting Could you get into the specifics of what it was? Could you maybe process elimination? Was this weight related at all?
No.
I didn't think so.
Mine was good. I mean, I had biggest time of your life. You're gonna have a good weight cut, you know. So I come out first. I mean, first match, I feel fine from the weight cut. Just, I mean, you can go back and watch the matches. What's the difference in the matches? Doesn't look like the same guy, and it didn't feel like the same guy. It stunk, and it stinks because you have one. I mean, it's one day, one freaking day.
One day, and that, yeah, it was, you know, we can talk about placebo, this and that, but how different he looked that second day, something definitely changed. It was whatever it was got figured out to some degree, this was something that was impacting him leading up, and it affected him in his first match too. But I was very much in the camp of that was a fine win and performance from Kyle, from a guy that didn't want to win, didn't want to try any offense things against Kyle. And he took a 4-0 win and said, all right, I'll see you, on to the next one.
Yeah.
But he says it was impacting him then. I guess maybe he wasn't as apparent. But a lot of the Twitter sleuths out there thought there was something up then. And I really didn't. I thought – I've watched this guy wrestle a lot, and, you know, I don't know if I said it on radio, but this is a guy that had a 1-0 or 2-0 win over Mark Martin at NCAA's his senior year when he won the Hodge. Like,
Mark Martin continues to catch strays, but...
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, this is like one of the greatest of all time, and he had, in his senior year, he had a...
That's fair, but Mark Martin's probably just sitting at home like...
Mark Martin is definitely not listening to FR.
No, I mean, but like Kyle Dake, one of the ways he dominates is by just not giving up any points. Yeah. Giving people zero opportunity to score. I was not worried after match one. It was he's fine. He's controlling this match.
JP had like a criteria win over this guy a year ago, two years ago.
Yeah, and it's like, what, you know, for Dake, it's like, why create more risk? I'm sure, I don't know, the way that a lot of us were looking at the bracket was like, Dake just needs to get to Chamizo. And then that's going to be the match in the semis, and then, you know, he'll be in the finals. But, like, conserve a little bit for that one, no problem. Like, you know, it didn't worry me at all.
Now, he didn't use this injury as an excuse, per se, because he did talk about how he felt that position. He's in that position, and he goes, I just couldn't catch my balance, or I couldn't – my balance was off.
Yeah, I lost my balance.
For some reason. We have a clip of him – talking about that too, because a lot of people were like, this is so weird, Kyle Dake dominates in this position. Mm-hmm. What went on? So we can listen to what he had to say.
That's one of the most dominant positions ever.
Yeah,
doesn't matter who I wrestle, whether it be Yanni, David, Gabe Dean, Kyle Snyder, Jordan Oliver, Jordan Burroughs, Jaden Cox, like, that guy's not stronger than all those guys. I know that. And, you know, it's, he had a good defense. Yanni hits that all the time, so I know the exact feeling.
But that is where he grabs the leg there.
Yeah, inside. It's kind of like a reverse mat. Not a reverse mat, I don't even know what to call it. But he just like goes for that inside leg and tries to lift it up. Or outside leg. And so I felt it before. It's not like something new. And, yeah, I just couldn't keep my balance.
Yeah,
couldn't stand up there.
Yeah, so... To me, I don't know why, this is the first time I'm like listening to that and thinking like, okay, he's saying this guy is not that good in that position. I lost my balance, and I lost my balance because of something going on. I just took it as weird thing. I just didn't have my balance this one time in this moment. But now as I think about it, it's like, oh no, maybe it's something. It was related to that thing. Because it was weird to see him not score from that position and get scored on.
Yeah.
From there.
I can't remember any time when I've ever watched a tournament play out where I have had such wild swings in terms of what I thought this tournament meant for somebody's legacy and for how we were going to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
Going into this tournament and, you know, getting into day one, it was like, okay, Dake is going to – he's going to win to the semis. He's going to have Chamizo. He's going to beat Chamizo. He's going to beat Sitikov. And it's like – if he does that, he's got three straight titles. Yeah. If he runs through 24, that would be seven in a row. That passes Burroughs. That passes John Smith. This guy's on he's on a path to be the greatest of all time. Plus, he's got four NCAA titles at four different weights. Like, it's going to be unquestionable. Then he loses in the semi or in the quarters in a match that's like so bizarre. It's like jaw dropping. Totally and then weird. I'm looking at him like, there is no way that this dude gets past Chamizo. Dake's done. Like, his tournament's done. I could not, you know, wrap my head around this guy beating both Dake and Chamizo, which he did, and then Dake gets pulled back in, and so, but it's like, well, if he would have been eliminated, and he doesn't even medal at the Olympics, then it's like, man, then how do we think about his legacy? All of a sudden, you think about all these other guys that maybe pass him in terms of the list of who are the top wrestlers of all time, and now he's got a bronze, and he's kind of not quite on the same path that he was, but his legacy is still very much intact, still, you know, a guy that we're going to evaluate depending on what happens in the next quad, as still maybe one of the
and
best.
And to clarify, when we say legacy, we're not we're talking about him in the pantheon of the greatest of the greats.
Yes,
he's right. He's already up there. When you're trying to, maybe not, that's not his goal, but when you're elevating that conversation to being one of the best ever, something like not placing at the Olympics, which is an incredible accomplishment to make it. But for someone like Dake, it's a conversation changer. But one thing I'll be glad when Ben's back just to talk about him with this, because there was a lot of discussion about where Dake fits in the discussion because he was behind Burroughs and because Burroughs did all these things. And then I was getting on Ben because I was like, well, wait, Dake doesn't get all the things that Burroughs did because he was behind him. Like, it doesn't work like that. And seeing him go to the Olympics for the first time at an Olympic weight and come back with bronze, it's like, okay, see, it's really, really, really hard to do. And even Burroughs, you know, he had a DNP in there. So it's, I don't know, I'm excited to revisit that conversation just because it's really hard to do, and you don't just get the benefit of the doubt because you could do something, right?
You brought up the Olympic weight, and that was Chamizo's entire point when we were setting up the match with Dake and Chamizo. He's like, Chamizo's like, dude, yeah, you have two titles, but they're at non-Olympic weights. And yeah. And I think in the U.S., we don't necessarily put as much emphasis on that, but globally, these guys do. And Chamizo's...
Yeah, Cuba, remember, Chamizo's Cuban. They don't even send to non-Olympic weights, really. They don't even participate.
Yeah. So when Chamizo was making that, you know, that famous, like, who you are, like, he's asking him over and over, that was the question. It's like, you don't have any Olympic weight credentials.
Yeah.
Then... even after Dake beat Chamizo, I went back and I was watching the interview with Chamizo from after that match, and he's like, 74 kilos is my weight. Let's do this again at 74. Let's see what happens then at an Olympic weight. That's my weight. And now we know, and that's kind of why that bronze medal was so big, was because it, you know, it was a match against a two-time world champ at the right, you know, at the Olympic weight, the one that the world considers to be the standard, and he got it done, and he looked amazing against Chamizo.
Yeah, he looked like an Olympic champion that day. And I thought, so I kind of had a similar thing with you. After he lost to Khadi Magomedov, I was like, all right, bronze is going to be really tough because it goes through Chamizo. But then the way he looked against Garzón, I was like, he's gonna win. He's going to beat Chamizo. I just thought he looked so different. It was, I don't know if I've ever seen a night and day type of performance from someone. But then again, how many different, it's like we say night and day with Dake and his loss to the Belarusian, but we're talking about four exchanges. It's like in a basketball game, you got an hour of shooting and missing and being terrible. It's like, no, you had one exchange here that got you put down 6-0. Mm-hmm. Then you had two other exchanges, I think. And that was the match. So it's you can kind of wonder, like, well, how off was he, or how much was it just, like, this one thing? I don't know. We can microanalyze that stuff forever.
I mean, first of all, slow your roll, and he looked like an Olympic champion because Sitikov's at that weight.
He still looked like that looked like an Olympic champion. Now, he could be an Olympic silver medalist. I'm not rushing to the front of the line. I'm just saying, when you watch the elite of the elite, you're like, that guy could win. That's an Olympic champion potential.
And to your point of he lost in only Russia. Several...
He loves Russia. Well, you love it.
Not that I... thrown out accusations, but most likely to test positive in the next 3 years is probably Cody Megamedov.
Oh, my gosh. All right, go off about this, Bray, because you made this point first to me.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, you see a guy, Kozak's previews, by the way, are just incredible, but he broke down in the weight class everybody's record against everybody else in the field. Cody Megamedov's record against the field was like something like 8-6, or, you know, fine but not great. And all of a sudden, he comes out, beats Kyle Dake that way, and he talked about, and Dake even said, in that position, I felt that defense. Those, you know, nobody's, you know, this guy's not stronger than these other guys.
That was my initial thing, was like, oh, maybe he's just never felt that specific defense,
yeah,
or something like that.
So he takes out Dake, and then it was like that. I was so worried because there's no way this guy can beat Chamizo, because there's nothing that would suggest he ever had. It's just like maybe Dake had an off match, but then he goes and beats Chamizo.
Looks really good doing it.
Yeah, puts a ton of points on the board. Like, people do not score that often against Frank Chamizo. It's really unlikely. And so for him to get those two wins, that is a massive departure from any performance we've ever seen from that guy. And that to me suggests like something was different. And, you know, maybe his energy pathways were popping, but maybe something else popping. We'll see.
Yeah. It's certainly when you see that kind of a departure from their normal performance, the questions get asked. And it's, when you're from that part of the world, you know, that even more, right? That's just part of the culture. And he's from Dagestan. And you know what? We kind of know what goes on there to a degree. Not all of them. Maybe we don't know the exact degree, but
and
we can certainly speculate.
He had flashes of greatness. Beat Sitikov in 2017. He was Russia's rep in 2017 at 70. That was at 70 kilos. But he hadn't gotten it done on the big stage. He even took bronze at the like fake 2020 Worlds, where only half the countries, only half the countries went. And that was even up at 79, and he had lost at Euros to some not so good guys. I think Kozak had him circled as like a dark horse, but no one you thought would beat Kyle Dake and a guy like Chamizo.
The Chamizo match was amazing. Because every American was watching it because the fate of Kyle Dake.
Right.
And it was tough for me because I actually really like Frank, and if it can't be Dake, I wanted it to be him. But I also did not want him to win because I would obviously prefer Dake to medal. So after Kody Mega, you know, we'll call him the Belarusian so I don't have a little seizure every time I try to say it. He got out early, but then it felt like Chamizo could almost get one anytime he wanted to go. Basically, every time he shot, he scored. So it was one of those matches where I'm like, man, if they wrestled again, I don't know if Chamizo loses. I think he probably gets it done. But thankfully, he won, and Dake was able to get that moment. And then that's really kind of seamlessly transitions to the final match, where Sitikov looked so freaking good. And he looked good the whole tournament, but you're like, well, that side. I mean, that side compared to the Dake Chamizo and evidently the Belarusian side. Just quite a different level of competition. But then he pieced him up. I think he blanked him. And he looked – the Belarusian got in deep on a shot. And how he locked around the crotch and sat around the corner, there's just a level of power there and strength. And he is going to be a handful for Kyle. I hope the match happens. I hope Kyle gets the opportunity to wrestle the Belarusian again too. But I got to see that match.
I know JD's he's the Russian lover Russian lovers.
But he loves him.
I will say, watching Sitikov, just like kind of the relief after he won, and the way he won, and just watching him celebrate, it was like kind of, you know, you forget like this dude, he had a wild quad, like the, you know, his like wedding was like ended in an insane disaster. Personally, he's gone through.
I'm not sure. And I don't know a lot about weddings, and I have seen Game of Thrones, but apart from that wedding, I've never heard about a wedding going as badly as this wedding went.
Yeah, and so I mean, just like so
look
much
into it.
Yeah, so much insanity in that guy's like personal life, and so it was a little bit like, okay, well, you know what, I can at least feel for Sitikov here. Good for him. Getting it done. Now let's go beat him after that.
This is probably why JD's not married yet. You know, he's like, I'm not going to Alex Sitikov.
Do we want to get into the JB Sitikov debate that we got into on the watch party?
I mean, listen, we can get into it. It's going to get heated, and I'm fine with that.
Well, let's before we do that, maybe on the Burroughs note, he put out an Instagram post that the road to Paris 2024 starts now. So he had kind of said he's not going away. We knew he wasn't going to be done. We knew he was going to continue mm-hmm. competing, but I was like, is he going to commit to the quad or not? And he looks committed in this image. I don't know if we have the Instagram pulled up, but he looks strong to quite strong. And if I may, I think Jordan Burroughs should wrestle at 79. And I think when the Olympic year comes, he should not go back down. He should go up. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One, he hasn't won the Worlds since they changed the weigh-in procedures, right? Different. Basically, he, without changing weight classes, he changed weight classes. Mm-hmm. Because the difference between night before and two-hour weigh-in is substantial. Look at this man. Does that look like a 163.5-pound person to you? Not to me. So I think he should go up. And you know what? We've got the reigning Olympic champion there. And is it going to be tough? Yeah. Obviously, either way is going to be really tough. But, man, you can go – at least you can – represent yourself.
He wrestled David Taylor and Kyle Dake in the past 12 months, and it was much closer with David Taylor than it was with Kyle Dake. And that was Jordan Burroughs at training to go 74 yes. kilos, not him bulking up, preparing to go 86 kilos.
He did not build his body up. He was big. I mean, he was big, but he didn't weigh as much as David.
Nope.
It was a 4-4 match.
Here's the other thing, too. You get on the team. If you do, your path at 86 is significantly easier than at 74.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Like, that weight class, 86, it's okay, but, like, 74 is just a complete minefield.
And you get the opportunity to be a multiple-time World or Olympic champion. You
did different weights.
Yes, Eric. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I said multiple time. I meant multiple weight.
Yeah. So I think it's – I mean, listen, 2024, he's not going to be the favorite in all likelihood to make a team at either weight.
Either way, yeah.
But the path seems – and, like, I guess the main thing is at least you're going to go out – if you go out and you don't make the team, you're going out on – your offense, wrestling your kind of match, and let the chips fall where they may. Not some sucked down and shrunken version of yourself, which was, I mean, everyone can watch, and that doesn't look like the same guy, even from when he wrestled David a couple months before compared to how he looked against Dake. On the one hand, Dake had an amazing game plan and executed and was just the better man. But to see Jordan, you know, just not look like himself, I think go up. I think 79 is going to be great for him. I think it had long been said among the USA wrestling circles, like, we probably would be better off if these guys were flipped anyways, because Burroughs is a little bigger and Day could come down. He's maybe more of a natural 74. So now it's kind of worked out that way. And I think it's great, and I'm excited to see. I mean, Burroughs for everything he's going through is one of the biggest stars in wrestling history, and to have him around another quad is going to be great. If he makes a team, that's amazing, and if he doesn't, we'll be just excited that he's going to be along for the ride and get to see what he's got.
Burroughs said some really interesting things when we sat down with him for the Imar match. It never happened, so a lot of that footage never saw the light of day. But
don't,
like,
get me started.
One of the things that
why'd you bring that up?
Because one of the
we're
things
having a good
that,
show.
One of the things that Burroughs said that I think is worth bringing up is he said, you know, he at the training camp in Georgia when he talked with Bader, he said something about like, you know, well, people in the wrestling, they think of the greatest of all time. They think about John Smith. He never missed, right? He won every time. But Burroughs made comparisons to people in other sports, right? Michael Jordan, you know, LeBron, Tom Brady, guys that have 6 or 7 titles in other sports, but 6 or 7 titles out of how many attempts? Like, way more than 6 or 7, right? So he kind of made that comparison. I asked him about that, and he's like, man, look, like, wrestling is getting to a point where it is big enough. It is a big enough sport to have stars that are big stars that are not just the guy on the team. And it wasn't always that way, right? It used to be for a long time. You're not on the team, you're obsolete. Like, get out of here. Like, mm-hmm. What are you doing? And I think it's a really good thing about that, you know, shows the health of our sport that we've got a guy like Jordan Burroughs who is pushing for another quad without any guarantees. He's not going to be the favorite, but he's still right up there, and he could do it. And he is 100% one of the biggest stars in the sport. That is a sign of the health of wrestling. And I don't think, without what Jordan Burroughs has done for wrestling, that people can do that as feasibly. Yeah, right?
I agree. All right, what's your debate? What's the argument?
Dude, yeah.
Are y'all go fight? Tee it up. Is it a good thing I'm between y'all?
Well, it's a good thing Spay's not here. He was getting real fired up.
What? You get...
KGB JD?
Yes.
What year... Do you think Jordan Burroughs is past his peak? Let's start off with that.
I mean, yeah.
Okay, so what year was peak Burroughs?
I'll give a range. I think 11 through 15 is as good as we've seen anyone wrestle ever. Okay. I think the Jordan Burroughs GOAT argument is it's not about... It's not, you can't just boil it down to number of titles in the order, but it's like when he was at his best, have we ever seen anyone wrestle at this high of a level? And I'm not sure that I have. Sagulayev in a different way, but what he was doing, winning his first 69 matches and how good he looked and the variety and the heart and the everything, I think that was probably his peak. And I think how incredible that peak was is what gets him in that kind of GOAT argument.
Okay. Well, our debate was you get peak Sitikov or peak Burroughs.
Oh, my gosh.
JD's taking Sitikov.
I'm taking Sitikov. I'm saying,
preposterous.
Get out of here.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, I just couldn't disagree.
You think he was that far past his prime in 2018 and 2019?
I mean, look, he never won a world title with the new weigh-in change. Give him full feed at 74, day before weigh-in, no chance. He had him beat. We're talking about, listen, okay, you're acknowledging that Burroughs in 18-19 was not at his peak, and yet this guy needed last-second heroics for a criteria victory.
Yeah, that's what you're also citing. That's what Burroughs did, part of what made him so great.
He wasn't winning like that. He wasn't winning matches.
He won matches late all the time. That was part of what made Jordan Burroughs great.
Not in 11 through 13, he wasn't.
That's because rules were different than he won periods.
One of the arguments that Spey was bringing up, which I think is a really good point, is I think I would take peak Sargoush over peak Sitikov.
That's what's going to be my next point. Sargoush is better than Sitikov, in my opinion.
And Burroughs took him out. And so, like,
okay, but that's Sargoush past his prime.
I don't know. He just won two titles. He was coming off two straight titles. He won worlds in 14.
Jordan Burroughs was coming off a world title when he lost to Sitikov.
They changed the weigh-in rules.
Okay, so
2 hour weigh-in. Peak Burroughs versus peak Sitikov.
2 hour weigh-in is the problem.
So then you take Sitikov. Yes,
he's smaller.
Yeah. Okay. Today's weigh-in rules: peak Burroughs versus peak Sitikov. Who do you take?
Okay, if you change all the rules.
It's not changing the rules. They're the rules now.
Well, I don't think he's going to go 74 yet. No. Burroughs' height was better than Sitikov's. This is audacious.
I agree. I agree too.
I can't believe it. This guy lost.
Are you serious?
This guy lost.
He just beat someone who 10-0 Dake easily and beat Shimizu.
What if Dake comes in and beats him? I mean, if you...
What if Dake comes and beats him? Well, he didn't. He lost 10-0.
If you really watch that match, the Dake, Cody Magomedov...
I watched him get forward.
And you think this...
And not score a point.
And you think that is an accurate representation of those two skill. And you think you leave that match thinking, that's about right. Cody Magomedov is probably 11 points better than Kyle Dake. If you believe that, then we should just stop talking about it. Because there's no way you believe that.
Yeah, I think Dake could be better. I don't think Dake loses 10-0.
Goosebumps.
10 times out of Dake 10
can,
to that.
Kyle, you can do better than 11-0 against Cody Magomedov. That's quite a concession. No, he didn't that time. But regardless, we're talking about Jordan Burroughs versus Sitikov. And this guy barely beat him twice.
And never lost to him.
Right, okay. But that was not the best version of Burroughs. Period. And it's clearly the best version of Sitikov. Sitikov lost, like, within the last year.
He couldn't make the Serbian team. That's a little joke.
Burroughs lost to Diaperhead.
who also beat, in
a match that was wrestled 8 seconds at a time. I mean, it was
That's the worst wrestling match I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was wrestled 8 seconds at a time.
Well, guys, Donnie Gaudet might be worse.
That was kind of great. Yeah, no, I can't believe you actually think, you legitimately think that peak Sidikov.
Look, Jordan Burroughs' career, better, no doubt. He has more titles. He won across weigh-in changes, across rule changes where he won period style versus the cumulative periods. But I don't, Sidikov's just that guy, I think.
Man, I don't. I mean, I think, listen, you're making it may sound like I don't think the guy's amazing and one of the, you know, four or five best in the, or two or three best pound-for-pound wrestlers in the world right now. But I just think it's a complete discounting and disrespect of what Burroughs was doing. Fine, take it to
that. I think it's disrespectful to say that Burroughs dropped off that much from 20.
He didn't have to drop off that much. If he drops off 2%, then like if he is 2% better,
but to 1% say that this better, isn't even an argument. Gets the way.
I think it's an argument. It's an argument for sure. It's worth considering. It's a worthy question to ask. But like the things Burroughs was doing in 11, 12, 13, I mean, like, they were more impressive than the things that Sidikov's doing. The things that Sidikov's done have been clutch. They've been, you know, amazing
you mean like
to
beat
watch.
Jordan Burroughs two times in a row?
Yes. Clutch. But the way, like, just the wrestling that you're watching, like, visually, it's clearly what Burroughs was doing was better.
Yeah, he would piece him up. 2011, 2006.
He would piece Sidikov up.
Absolutely. He pieced up. Yes. I think he would.
I think that's crazy. That's more crazy. That like that's crazy to say.
Well, listen, then lock me up.
lock me up for insanity.
Lock me up. Listen, I'm not competent to stand trial because I think Burroughs would peak Burroughs beat Sidikov with you know, I'm not saying it'd be easy, but I think he wins. I think he's not getting the scores like he would. I don't know. I just think he's substantially better. At his best, and even with a significant departure from his best, he still was within criteria of him in 1 point. Miracles. This guy's so great that with 5 seconds
that's
left.
That's to me what makes me pick Sidikov is that he's just...
That just shows, you know what I'm saying? For those two clutch moments, the whole reason those moments are insane is because Jordan Burroughs is the most clutch wrestler we've ever seen, and he's done things like that forever. And
he did that to Sidikov, and then Sidikov somehow did it to him that same match.
Yeah.
Where we were like, oh, Burroughs freaking Burroughs again, scored late when he had to, and then Sidikov went, you know what, I'm going to score here in these last couple seconds, actually, and ruin y'all's parade.
Man.
He did ruin it.
I better not. He ruined it, but yeah, I mean, I think this is crazy. I really can't believe you really think that.
Lock me up.
You're incarcerated, sir.
Everybody's under arrest.
Everyone's under arrest.
Well, I citizens arrest you. Bray citizens arrest me. You citizens arrest Bray.
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, I think I'm the only one that's not jailed right now, which is great.
Which is great.
Hey, I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna enjoy my freedom while you guys are locked up.
All right. I'm sure I know where JD falls in this debate. And I almost don't even want to bring it up. Well, let's talk international pound for pound. I'm sure he has Sidikov number one ahead of Sagalayev, but you know we'll kick it off. Who
Tagestan over Osetia? Come on.
Who is the best? who are the five best, six best pound for pound? And really, I think it has to start with the Olympic champions. I think they've got to be involved. Now, there's some scenario. Maybe you take two of the finalists ahead of some of the, champs.
We need to set some parameters. Pound for pound, are we talking about resume, or are we talking...
Resume is not even debatable. You can't debate the just lining up who has the most titles. It's who is... It's a combination of their dominance with who they've beaten, with, you know, the number of titles. You can't... Because, all right, we can all add and just say Sagalayev, Sidikov, then Oguyev, then...
I'm not talking about just numbering titles. I'm talking about the fact that Gable has losses in 2019, but, like, we can all say how much he's improved.
Exactly.
But if you look at, like, resume, his resume might not look quite as good as, you know, someone
else.
That's where we need to...
That's why it's like a cosmic gumbo, you know? You
gotta. I don't even know what that is, but...
Listen.
Have you not seen that episode? I think you should leave.
I haven't seen all of them from season 3. I know.
I'm going to slap you. No, I won't, because you could beat the crap out of me. All right, let's get it started. Well, Sagulayev is undisputed. Listen, where is he in the GOAT debate now? Six out of seven.
Satyev is still number one. I don't know who's number two. Freestyle, just men's freestyle.
I mean, how high up is, like, Belaglazov?
He's two or three. How high is John Smith? How high do you value, like, a run without
six in a row.
Gold CS versus maybe more, but not in a row?
Those guys are all up there. I don't know. Right now, I think maybe
Valentin Jordanov's he's super good too.
Yeah. I think he's in that conversation. Sitikov. He's around Sagulayev. Those guys. Or sorry, yeah, Sagulayev. Yeah, not Sitikov.
You get love that it. Guy. My get gosh, JD's infected your brain.
Yeah,
this is not good.
This is why we gotta lock him up.
Yeah, we have to. It gives me no pleasure. Yeah, I mean, if he goes, look, I'll just say this: if he goes through 24. It's undisputed.
Crown him.
Crown him. One loss. I mean, this guy's one loss.
That he avenged?
Huh?
That he avenged
twice now? You know, it's...
Possibly more times if he goes through.
It's going to be those two for the foreseeable future. Because who's coming up at 97? Like
Jaden Cox.
Sure. Right. I was thinking internationally. Domestically, that is...
Yeah, that's like what I said. Just next year. It's the only guaranteed.
That's a good point. But I think it is guaranteed that it's going to be America versus Russia at 97 for the foreseeable future. I don't see Sharifov has to age. I looked into it. He's still a human.
Yeah.
He will get older. Odakadze still out there. Keep getting them checks, young blood. But I know that your day's coming. How about Salas? I was very happy to see Salas get a medal.
Yeah.
I didn't. Obviously, I wanted Jaden to beat him in 16, but I was kind of like, oh, it'd be cool if he got a medal, because I just always thought he was really fun. He did some crazy stuff, and so it was cool to see him get a medal. But he will age, and
I couldn't believe Sharifov beat forever fifth Odakadze. I thought it was in the cards. that guy always loves to lose in the bronze match.
He loves it. It's one of his favorite moves.
It's not a good one, in my opinion.
It's not a good move. It's not a good move, but it'd be better than any of my moves, so what am I to say anything about it? But, yeah, it's going to be America versus Russia that way for the foreseeable future. Sagulayev's obviously number one. So my case for David Taylor number two is as follows. He has not lost. If you say the words Drew Foster to me.
Yeah.
Just don't talk to me ever again. Just don't. He didn't lose to Drew Foster. The injury to fall doesn't count. It just doesn't. It's unfortunate. If it was the finals of a tournament, yeah, Drew Foster would be the winner. But that's not what it was. It was an exhibition match, no score, whatever. Listen, nothing against Drew Foster. He's a beast. But give me a freaking break if you think that guy has a legitimate win over David Taylor. So the guy hasn't lost since 2017 trials to Jaden, okay? Has not lost. That's an incredible run. Now, he has an injury year in there. Because of the Drew Foster match, but hasn't lost in that much time. He's got an Olympic and a world title, and he's got really, really elite wins. He beat an Olympic champion, Yazdani, now three times. He's got a win over Jordan Burroughs, which... Oh my.
Pardon me.
Is that how you sneeze?
No, I tried to muffle it so it didn't go into the old microphone.
I just let it rip.
I don't want to let it rip.
It's okay. A little shrapnel never hurt anybody. Okay, so...
I don't know if that's true.
A sneeze shrapnel. Like anyone ever got sick from germs.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
I think that the longevity, and I think the dominance, that's a factor too. It's like, all right, I will grant it. 86 is not as good a weight as 74 kilograms, because let's be honest, we're talking about Sitikov versus Taylor versus maybe Uguyev.
Yeah.
That's the debate for the next 3 pound for pound.
I'd say Uguyev's like a tier down. I think it's those three probably.
I do too. I do too.
I agree.
So I think you have to, because his weight's not as good as Sitikov's, you've got to be dominant. Okay, well, he just torched his way to the finals, and he beat a really, really good guy in the finals, Yazdani, who is an Olympic champion, who basically... Has Yazdani lost to anyone other than David since...
Not since, like, 2017 or something like that.
He lost to I don't even know. Did he even lose in 2017?
He lost to Sabalov. That was his last one, but he avenged it later that year.
But that was a 74.
Four,
right.
He's only lost to David at 86.
Right. So this is a really good guy that destroys a lot of people, and David's beaten him three different times. So I think the dominance combined with it's he doesn't have it maybe as many good because
Sitakov far less landmines. Far less landmines.
Far fewer landmines. I would agree with that. But you know what? Sitakov, one of his big things is that he beat David Taylor or beat Jordan Burroughs. But
twice.
That's a shared win. That's a shared win now. They both have beaten him. And
are you putting no asterisk on the Jordan Burroughs win for David Taylor and the fact that when they were at the same weight class, Jordan Burroughs won a handful of times over him?
Over David?
Yes.
Yeah.
But when I mean, listen, when they went out of catch, I know
record versus Burroughs.
I would say we're talking about two different wrestlers when you're talking about 74 kilogram Kyle Day or David Taylor and 86 kilogram.
Okay, then you have David. To say that's you're true. Talking about two different wrestlers, Jordan Burroughs then versus now.
I don't say that because I think at 86.
Well, you just made that argument with me again.
No, when you wrestled David at 86, that was a really, really good Burroughs.
So you think that was a really good Burroughs?
When he doesn't have to make
74?
When he doesn't have to make 74 2 hours. Yes, that changes things. If you have to wrestle at a lighter weight, that makes you – that can hurt certain wrestlers if you're bigger. He's too big for 74 now, in my opinion. He can beat basically everyone in 74 except for a handful of guys.
So I'm actually going to lean Sitakov on this one because he's got the extra title. Obviously, David didn't have the opportunity because of the injury.
Are you guys Americans?
listen. You heard me take Burroughs in the Burroughs Sitakov thing. But
hey, you should begin after his Spey because pre-Olympics.
Oh, I already Spey know him.
Sitakov. I took
David. Listen. I've been dealing with Spey for a while now. I know he's KGB.
The point that you brought up about like. Greater, more landmines for Sitakov. I mean, that is huge. Like, that's, when you think about pound for pound, I mean, one of the big criteria is, like, who did he beat? How many guys? And David just hasn't had as many of those elite guys in his path. No fault of his own, but Sitakov has. He's got it done. Three titles. The wins over Burroughs, wins over Chamizo. Like, I think...
He lost in the last year. That, to me, is a big ding.
He did lose in the last year.
No excuses for heartbreak, either.
Also, same thing with Dave Taylor sitting out for a year. I know he shouldn't be punished for sitting out a year, but
you should note that because you literally can't lose if you don't wrestle.
Yes, he didn't wrestle at a world championships.
Right. So, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
If Dave doesn't wrestle at this Olympics, it's a huge what if for us.
What do you mean?
Like if he didn't wrestle at this Olympics for some reason, pretty much almost all Americans were picking him to win. Mm-hmm. Like we were all picking David Taylor to win. And David Taylor had to go and get a last-second score against Yazdani. David Taylor wins 8 matches out of 10 with Yazdani, I think, or 4 out of 5.
Seems like a 10 out of 10 to me.
But who's to say, like, David won't get that takedown, like, one of these times? Like, yeah, I'm just saying,
for sure.
Wrestle that match again. Maybe he doesn't get a takedown. We'll always pick David Taylor moving forward. But, like, if you don't wrestle in a world championships, we're basically just writing in that he went undefeated at world championships.
Also, like, it is, I mean, 100% Sitakov had a loss, but it's a loss to a world champ. It's a loss in an event that has way less significance than the Worlds or Olympics. And that doesn't discount the fact that it happened, but just looking
also
at
someone
what,
he's beat.
Also, someone he's beat. Looking at what Sitakov has done. In the last 3 years I don't know if it makes it worse. He's also proved that he's better than that guy. It's not like there's this boogeyman out there that always has his number. So that's why for me, it's Sitakov ahead of
this
ahead
also. Of Taylor. This shouldn't go into the
only
like
one
ranking
way to find out.
Or
they
pound
they
for pound
wrestle.
Discussion.
That'll be awesome.
Catch weight 79.
Let's do it.
Ooh,
poor David.
I know. Sitakov only 25, so
so is Sagulayev.
Okay, but I'm just saying. I think we are just now seeing peak Sitakov, or we could see peak Sitakov for this next quad.
Yeah, but for pound for pound, you can't.
No.
You can't guess what he might become. Like,
yeah, I know. I was just kind of sprinkling in that antidote.
Thanks for the sprinkles. I liked it.
KGB sprinkles over here. Okay. I mean, certainly that's the debate, right? Those two. I threw Agoyev in there just because he's won three in a row. But I think we do agree that those are two or three, and then Agoyev would probably be next in line.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Agoyev, like, he's been ultra dominant and impressive, but he doesn't have a, you know, a Yazdani to beat. He doesn't have a Burrows to beat. He doesn't have a Chamizo even really to beat.
We should say, I think part of that is because he's won these past three, but also partially because of the nature of 57 kilos. We don't see guys hang out there for a very long time.
A little more transient.
Yeah, guys often move up to 61 or can't hold the weight, and we see weight become like a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
Where especially with these changed weigh-in rules, a lot of guys had to move up.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Because the weigh-ins change things.
I mean, the weight class, 57 kilos in 2016 compared to 2021 at the Olympics is like night and day. And I think that's the thing.
No,
like,
one's left.
Yugov didn't have like those kinds of – I mean, listen, like Kinshigishvili was in there. Legend. Sanayev was in there. Haji Aliyev was in there. Who else? Dubov, Dan Dennis.
Higuchi, right?
Higuchi was in there. Who else? Lebedev was in there. Oh, Rahimi was in there. Like
poisoned.
Yeah, Yalis Boni Rodriguez was in there.
He didn't even want to be there.
He didn't want to be there. He's like, please don't make me go.
Yang from
I know
from,
I'm bad.
Yang from North Korea was
that
like,
dude was really
was
good.
Legit. Like that, you know, Erdenbot, like this was an insane weight.
Way tougher.
And that was a weight that would be, you know, comparable to a 74 kilos or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Yugov hasn't really had to deal with many of those guys, if any, like throughout
the field's just smaller run. With day of weigh-ins at 57.
Yeah. We don't need 57 anymore. Like let's give him a couple kilos and bump
61.
It up. Yeah.
61. That's the junky thing is like 60-61 was such an amazing weight.
Yeah.
Remember Asgarov and Kudukov and all those legends.
Do it like Greco. Give him 60 as the Olympic and 55 as a non-Olympic. If you get, you know, if you want opportunities non-Olympic, go 55, fine. But for the Olympic weight, 60 I think would make a lot more
especially
sense.
Like 2 hour weight.
You think they'll ever expand Olympic weight classes back to more than 6?
I don't know. We asked, he was asked, Lalovich was asked, and
it doesn't seem like it's on the agenda.
He obviously wants it, but I think the writing on the wall that probably not anytime soon, at least.
That's a shame.
Which is why I think you see the 10 weights and the you know, a 10 weight worlds every single year. It's like, okay, listen, this we need to contest these every single
there
year.
They're definitely tweeners.
Make it more further legitimize the non-Olympic weights. I think that's a great thing. So what else? Okay, then we go. See, I would put Steve Gable ahead of Odaguru because now it's tough because Odaguru just won the weight that we're saying was like the best weight.
And in the process avenged his two losses from last year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think with Gable, it's just like how he did it. Getting there, like 8-0-ing Taha is just an insane thing to do. And we haven't seen anyone outside of Taha score those kind of points against Gino. I don't like calling him Geno. Maybe that's what how you say it. I like Gino. You know, I just like to. I just like to think it's a guy that has a you know, pizza shop in Manhattan or something. I don't know. He certainly doesn't, but that's how I say his name. So accept it. But yeah, I go Gable ahead of Odaguru because if it's close, I lean towards the American. And I have to provide some balance on this basically Russian propaganda show that I now.
It should also be said he won in 2018. Two titles at what is regarded as the toughest weight class.
It's tough because at heavyweight, like Gable had to go through two absolute legends to do it. And I mean, they are. The thing is, like,
Haji's a legend. Haji Aliyev is a legend.
He is. Achieving legend status at 65 is a lot harder to do than at heavyweight.
Musakayev is a legend.
No, he's not. Let me rant about Musakayev real quick.
This dude is no longer even must-watch TV because he just does this weird thing now where he's like, wait, I get tired 1 minute after activity, so now I'm going to do this thing where I'm not going to do anything early and try to score late. But, oh, I forgot the fact that no matter what I'm doing, if I do it for longer than 3 minutes, I'm tired. So now he's just a boring wrestler.
Yeah, he was boring.
He didn't do anything anymore.
He was not on his best display this Sunday.
No,
he let us down.
He changed how he wrestles, and now he's boring. He's not even who he was.
I think we can say we all were very excited to watch Musikaev. He was must watch TV, and he let us down. We wanted to see the guy hang 9 on the board and then lose, 15-14.
Tobias is my new Musikaev.
Yeah.
You don't get the antics with him, though. No. There were still some antics. We got a double carcass cam.
He does nothing. He does, but now instead of him doing crazy stuff that I've never seen on the wrestling mat, he does nothing and then acts hurt. Yeah. That's even worse. Now there's nothing to root for there.
The chat was all over that knuckle injury that he was dealing with.
Well, have you ever dealt with our injured knuckle?
Spitz, I'm sure if you have, it's nothing compared to Musikaev's knuckle. But
yeah, no doubt.
Never mind.
there's something with the name.
I know.
I'm not going there.
The thing is, like, getting. Okay, you look at Taha and Gino, and those guys both have 3 titles, 7 medals each, right? So it's hard to get 2 guys like that at 65 kilos just because of the nature of the weight. So
Even get Timmy Hans into this argument because
he hates heavyweights. He said the fact that Lopez could be considered greatest of all time because he's a heavyweight is just preposterous. He went,
wow, that is a sizist if I ever.
But it is a similar like the weight class it is 2 guys. It has been 2 guys for a couple quads, and that's where for Gable to take him out it's impressive, but it's almost impossible for there to be guys like that at 65. I am though going to lean Gable because. You look at Taha, and he has literally never taken a loss that bad.
Never.
His worst loss in his career was 6-2. Gable handed him an 8-0 loss. Like, that, for me, is the data point that says, like, okay, I think we can say, Gable pound for pound is doing things that, like, no one is doing.
Mm-hmm. And also, because of when the resume is limited, you have to use a little more imagination and, like, extrapolation because he's got such a small resume, but what he's done in that little bit of time is like just brilliant. So it's a close debate with all these guys. Amazing. Who would be the next guy in? Who's the next guy in the pound for pound? That's not Olympic champion.
Yazdani?
Kyle Frederick.
Well, Yazdani's only lost to TT. Kyle just lost. Takati, so I think...
No, Kyle Snyder.
Oh, Kyle Snyder.
Frederick.
He has also taken more losses. He lost to Odokadze.
Yeah. If you could just assess based on performance at Worlds and Olympics, then it's like Snyder. But yeah, if you're factoring in all... I mean, he doesn't mind taking losses. That's fine. He learns from those, and that's,
And I think his losses sometimes, like, kind of get overstated or, like... People always say he takes so many like weird losses. He doesn't really. He does do the occasional he'll take, but he doesn't as much anymore. He lost to Mohamedan last year, Sharifov at Worlds last year, which that kind of hurts him.
The Mohamedan one was like, okay, wow, this is a new feel. He'll get this. The Sharifov one was the one for me. It's like, what is happening? Like, and that was at a World Championship. So,
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I don't think it would happen again, personally.
I don't either.
So, yeah, I don't know. Who's the next best guy in there?
I mean, Yazdani might be for me.
Plus, he won 74 in 2016.
Yep.
With Burrows in the bracket.
Plus, he beat Pico. You can't forget about that.
Dang it.
2010?
I couldn't believe how he beat Pico. I was like, this guy ain't going to beat Pico.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my gosh, what the heck? This guy's a freak.
Guy who won 74 at the Olympics and took silver at the Olympics at upper weight class is quite impressive.
Who struck so much fear in the heart of Deepak Punia that he wouldn't even take the mat.
Correct.
That is a wild one.
What's wrong with that guy? Get him out of here.
Also, the fact that Deepak Punia made the finals kind of shows you the depth at 86.
Depth, not deep. Well, Deepak. David wasn't there.
I know.
So that hurt.
But top I'm saying you take one guy out and like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. Not the best way. But
Shallow Pack is making the finals. Yeah.
Deepak Shakur, as I call him. All right. So, where do we want to go next? Maybe we should get some questions in.
It's already almost 9:30.
It's almost 9:30. There's probably tacos here. I should send one of you guys out to harvest a couple sausage and eggs.
It's all about the bacon and eggs.
These savages come in here on Wednesdays only and start scooping them up.
Yeah.
I don't see you here on Monday when there's no free tacos. No. Tuesday, you roll up around lunchtime for free lunch. Oh, but everyone's a bunch of early birds on Taco Wednesday.
Okay. Early bird gets the taco. You know what they say?
No one's earlier than us. We're here. We're the alarm boys.
We're grind boys.
Yeah, we're grinding. I don't know about grind boys.
Yeah, grind boys not.
I don't know. Well, I'm not going to keep that one in the rotation. you can use it. I'm not JDKGB.
Trademarked.
Trademarked. Okay. Did you get some questions in there from the...
Yeah, they're in the doc.
Okay, cool. All right. Stringer's burner phone. Shout out Stringer Bell. RIP. This year's women's freestyle team, the best representation of our sport at... sorry. He kind of worded this weird. The best representation of our sport ever. In their interviews, the ladies were all well-spoken, grateful for the opportunity, and seemed to realize that their role in promotion of sport was the bigger cause. Yes, yes, yes. Coach Steiner talked about this, about how huge it was for women's wrestling, not just that they had this success, but then that so many people got to see and were exposed to what wonderful representatives they were. For Adeline Gray to handle Olympic finals loss with the dignity and the attitude that she had. For Tamara Mensah-Stock, everyone saw how she just caught on like wildfire just to be exposed. Like, what is this sport? Who are these women? And how, like, it's just, you don't encounter that, right? Sarah and even Kayla in defeat, and Helen, it is a huge thing, because not only do they represent themselves tremendously, but then how well they wrestled. I mean, four medals is amazing and an incredible accomplishment. And it's the best performance I think we've ever had, not just at the Olympics, but I think even for like a world championships, four medals and a gold and a silver. And it's just it was an incredible performance by the ladies, and definitely put us further on the map and really shown the sport in a light that couldn't be more glowing.
We often talk about what a nebulous idea it is to say grow the sport. Like, what does that mean? I don't know. But, like 8 years ago, what we needed to do was get the rule set right, so that it's more watchable, more interesting. We got that right. And then the thing that Burroughs said about Tamara, like, you want to grow your, you want to grow your following, win. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what, as wrestlers, as a wrestling community, and especially in the U.S., it's like, you want to grow the sport. You want people to pay attention. Win, right? Like, people, nobody can stop. Everyone's talking about Gable. Like, the guy shows up everywhere. The guy has become, like, a mainstream person that you're going to see everywhere. Tamara, I mean, she's grown like crazy. And the women's team especially, like, this was a sport that I remember, I don't know, two or three Olympics ago, people like saying, like, wait, that's an Olympic sport? Like, women's wrestling? It's like, yeah, not only is it an Olympic sport, but we've got great representatives on the mat, off the mat. And I think because of this, people are way more likely to tune in for the world championships. We've got built-in stars, built-in storylines that we didn't have before. And if that happens, and if people are more and more like paying attention to what's happening in international wrestling, that's going to be massive.
And that's the crazy thing about the Olympics, is it's every four, in this case 5 years, you get a chance to showcase your sport, or you can... just kind of be in the back and remain sort of obscure, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all tied to winning, right? If we get blanked at the Olympics, people just watch their interviews on Flow, right? And that's pretty much it. That's where it stops. But they win, and to Burrow's point, yeah, that's when you get the further exposure, the national exposure that we're trying to give them. But, you know, our voice only extends to wrestling fans. This extends to moms and dads just sitting at home watching, like, wow, I should get my daughter into this.
And there was another question. I'm sorry, I'm not sure who asked it, but they asked about the state of wrestling overall now versus after Rio in 2016. And I think it's in a better place. A large part of that is because of how much women's wrestling has grown. And to like just how it is, America, the better America does like at a sport, a lot of times the better it is overall because of, you know, how many Americans tune into the Olympics and stuff like that. And when American women are winning 4 medals versus 1 or 2, and they have multiple in gold medal matches, it's tremendous.
Yeah, it is big. And the state of international, I mean, think about what happened in Rio in 2016. I mean, that was reprehensible, right? What we saw. And now, you know, we saw a very fair Olympic Games. We saw amazing wrestling. We saw America do well. That you're right, JD. That is a component, right? And I think I don't know if I have the breadth of knowledge from the entire history of the sport to say this is the healthiest wrestling's ever been, but I believe it is.
It's the healthiest it's been in my short lifetime.
Yes. Which you know, who knows how old you even were when Jordan Burroughs was winning his first title. I don't even want to know. You know, considering you were watching, you know, Nickelodeon between Jordan Burroughs' matches, I don't know how much credence we should give. But you know what? You know your stuff about wrestling. So I'll just let you go. This is going to take a while for me to shake, JD. Just so you know. Anywho, but yeah, I think we're in a super healthy spot. It's amazing. Little Spidey Boy says Gable would bulldoze Sagulayev, in my opinion.
Ooh, who do you take, bulldozer or tank?
Well, see, that's not fair because he's not really a tank, but a tank would beat a bulldozer.
I mean, it has ammunition.
It literally has a gun that blows up basically anything.
Good point.
So we'll just take it to the listen. Gable's too big.
Yes,
he's too big, and he. I think the style. Listen, Kyle needs to go under Sagulayev probably to win. He's got to find a way to score. That way, Gable doesn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Gable doesn't have to attack the legs. Gable's not going to get pushed around like that. Gable might get gutted. We would need to not get under him. But even then, it's like really. 213-pound guy's going to gut Gable? I don't know. I mean, this is not a... I'm not just giving him that. I say it's an option. I'm not ruling it out, but... I think 250-pound Gable, I think he's a better athlete than Sagulayev, which there's not many people... I don't think there's any better athlete at 97. Maybe Jaden, right? Maybe Jaden's a better athlete. And it's a maybe because this dude, I mean, you get the fluency and the fluidity in which Sagulayev just stepped in on that low single and just like muscle memory went to that chest lock. I was like, oh my, how are you just like that? How is it that ingrained in you? This is what you do. So I just give him a lot of credit. And he's one of those rare, that's why Sagulayev is one of the greatest to ever do it. He's a rare combination of... He's got the grit that he can win some tough matches. He's got the incredible positioning and defense where you basically can't score on him. But he also has this kind of freaky athleticism where think about the cartwheels we've seen him do. He can do some wild freaking stuff when he has to. The thing is, it's very rare that he gets put in the position where he has to do these things. But the time sometimes comes and he does it.
I think the real argument or conversation is how, because I don't think he can beat Gable. I don't think there are too many people outside of Tadiev that think he could do that. But could he, how high could he get? Fifth?
At heavyweight? Yeah, he'd be top five. If he said
we saw him go 86 to 97. Can we see him?
But 125 is just it's a difference. Huge. Yes, 30 kilos. That's just like that's insane. I don't know, man. Because watching Gable was like the smallest dude in the field. Almost, yeah. He might have been the smallest dude in the field. And think how much bigger he would be than Sagalayev. So think about Taha and Gino versus, I don't know. It would be really tough. Because Sagalayev needs that power advantage, I think. He has a lot of other skills, but I think he is a freak from a power perspective. What he did to Kyle?
It makes it even more crazy that they came up from 86.
Yeah, he was big out the gate for 86. Everyone knew. When he won at 14, it was like he wants to go up right now. Because I remember he was talking with Herbert. Herbert was like, yeah, he wants to go up. He doesn't want to stay down there. He's too big. And they made him stay through the Olympics so that they could have their best team.
Had to get Boltikayev in there.
You're not going to not get Boltikayev in the lineup. Aww. Nappy Boltikayev.
But he's not necessarily a big 97. Even now that he's grown into it, he's a full 97, but he's not a big 97.
He's not big, but he's not the biggest one. He's still probably the strongest one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Funny, we had a Boltikayev in this year's Olympic field. It was Mohamedian.
Yeah.
Everyone started getting high on him. And then I got freaked out when he beat Kyle, and then I kept watching him. I was like, he was not even like on my radar at that point. I was like, this guy not gonna be Kyle again. He has no confidence. It's just one freak thing. Freak moment. So anyways, I can't wait to see who the next Boltikayev is, because they're always fun. Okay. Man, there's so many good questions. I'm not deleting these. We're moving them on until we run out of them. Okay, from Blast Wrestling. Does anyone truly understand what constitutes a wrestler being placed on the shot clock? Seems capricious and inconsistent. I think Blast Wrestling is an attorney. I would say in general, you kind of know the behaviors that get put on the clock, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not controlling center, you're probably going to get put on the clock. I know it makes it tough to say that after Kyle got put on the clock, but watching the entire tournament, that's how they were calling it. That was just one moment where it was, you know.
I would say two things that can make it hard to predict. One is if you have a match where guys are trading control of center, which does happen, where the hand fight is in the center and one guy, you know, back is a little bit towards, and then he hand fights back. Like those, it's almost impossible to predict. You don't see them that often, though. Usually there's one guy who's figuring it out. The other thing that I would say made it a little bit hard to tell this Olympics is their camera angles were so tight that it was a lot of times really hard to figure. It was hard to see who was like controlling center, who wasn't. And they were really like, you know, they were going all in on these like little, you know, interesting, you know, camera angles and whatever. So it was like, all right, now we're shooting like ground up. It's hard to tell where they are on the mat, and they're super zoomed in, and it was just kind of like, you know, so that made it a little bit harder at this particular event. But in general, there's usually one guy who takes over the center of the mat.
And when they do, you know, flip-flop control of center, whoever is controlling center at the 90-second mark will generally get the benefit of the doubt at that time, because that's when they have to put somebody on. So
the thing that's frustrating for American wrestling fans, I think, is when, you know, you see – I mean, like, for example, David, you know, he shot a couple times early, but he wasn't controlling center. And it's like – and then it's like David's on the clock. Well, that's how it's going to be. That's one thing where I wish they would reevaluate that policy, where it's like, it's not just about the control. If you're taking the attacks, like,
here's why I was like that. And now I'm like, you know what? I like it, controlling center, because that is like much more tangible than a committed attack.
Yeah.
Because, all right, yeah, we've seen it. Like, oh, okay. You see it in folk style, right? Guys trying to, all right, I haven't shot for the entire match, and now there's 40 seconds to go, let me just level change and like swipe at legs and to get a call. It's like, no, you didn't really commit. So that's one area I'm kind of like, well, no, control center. That's a real thing that's tangible.
And if it's a big difference in like, if there's a large shot output, you will occasionally see it if, you know, one guy's controlling center, but one guy, you know, has taken six actual shots,
getting to legs shots.
Yes, you will see it.
Yeah.
So it's not unheard of, but for the most part, it is control center.
Yeah, it's I can get why you say it is inconsistent, because there are moments where it doesn't align with what we're describing. But I would say, to me, consistency is 85-90% of the time. Yeah. Is this how they do it? Yes, that's how they do it. And that's too much to the chagrin of American wrestling fans with Helen's match. But that's how they... That was aligned with how they say they call it.
Yes.
With Helen's loss, which I hope she gets... I hope she comes back. She's not commit, but I would love to see that match again, because I think she could do it. I think they were totally stunned that... Her opponent didn't shoot at all, Kawhi. I think they really thought she was going to attack more, and they were way too... Japan was way more respectful of Helen than they anticipated, and mm-hmm. they thought, okay, we'll get some counter stuff, because Helen's, as great as her offense is, her counter defense is, like, maybe her best thing.
Yeah.
It just didn't come. Okay, and this is a three-part question from Blast Wrestling. Has David Taylor now won every big tournament possible since youth?
He did not win University Worlds. He lost to Sargoosh, I believe.
One of my favorite students ever, Dennis Sargoosh.
Dude, how about that? When Sargoosh just rolled up at universities after having been at Senior Worlds for, like,
several years.
Multiple times, yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Yeah, he's won everything. I mean...
But I think, besides that, even if he has lost, he has later won.
Let me rattle it off. I mean, started young. He was winning all the roller stuff. He was like a legend then. 4 Ironman titles, 4 Ohio State tournament titles, Super 32 title. At that point in high school, that was pretty
never
much
won PA it. State though. So
he never won PA States. NCAA titles, world title, Olympic title. That's a pretty solid resume. Yeah, he's won it all.
Euregan title.
Yeah, Euregan.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Scuffle.
Scuffle title.
That's a pretty good tournament.
Yeah.
Okay, and question 3. This guy, hey, 3 great questions, so we'll ask them all. Plus or minus at 8 on how many leg attack takedowns Sagulayev has given up in his senior career.
It's over just because of the number of matches.
I was going to say under.
No, I think it's over.
Leg attack takedowns.
Leg attack takedowns, yes. Not like go behind takedowns? Or just
it says leg attack takedowns.
Or not him trying to, you know, trying to throw and then he, okay, whoops, got to caught.
I don't think he's given up.
Okay, yeah, maybe not.
Snyder got one. That's. Well, how many did he
get? He got in 2017 if you include 2017.
He got one this year.
He got one this year.
There's one.
And he had how many? He had one or two in 2017.
You got to remember, this guy doesn't wrestle much at all.
Yeah.
First of all,
yeah.
Look at. I mean, how many points? I would love to just go back.
His career's been so long, though. Like since 2014,
but he blanked worlds on a couple of occasions. He only goes to nationals. Sometimes he doesn't even have to wrestle in nationals.
Yeah.
I bet if we go back and look through it, I bet it's less than 10.
Leg attack takedowns.
That's a good line.
I think this number is great, and I'm taking the under.
Yeah,
I might take the under. No,
it's not points. 8 different leg attack takedowns. Yeah. I don't think we've seen that.
Yeah,
I'm now convinced it's under.
Yeah, it probably hasn't happened.
I would bet JD's life on it. That's how serious I am about it.
He lost to Batsiev 8-7 at one point. I don't remember that match.
One.
That was Russia Nationals 2017. Yeah, leg attack thing is the... Because if it's total takedowns, I might take the over.
Yeah.
But leg attack takedowns...
Last question from a jazz legend. And I can't believe Roy Donk spends time asking us questions. He was freaky on that trumpet. But do you think... Yazdani was planning on Taylor hitting a single. It looked like he was expecting a single and was going into a split position, but when the double came, he was caught on his... No way he was anticipating a blast double.
Who in the world was anticipating a double?
Not even David. David said it in his interview. He's like, I don't know. It's just kind of reactionary.
Yeah. He's like, I mean, not like... David's like, it's not like I've never done that before, but yeah, you probably don't think that's the move I'm going to hit, but... I mean, it was just there, and no, I don't think Yazdani was expecting that at all. I think that's why it worked. So, I mean, it looked like that looked like how Burroughs was running through people. It was like just like you just collapse underneath it, and no way he saw it coming. And I think I guess the Iranian coach is getting fired for their Olympic performance.
Oh, but yeah.
If you go and look,
he's probably going to be imprisoned.
But to me, I'm like, dude, that guy had the game plan. And his guy just didn't execute it the last 15 seconds. That was it was a great game plan. They had two game plans that were super. Now, if Yazdani had wrestled with the same tactics he had in the previous two meetings, I would say, okay, that's coaching malpractice, and that's bad. But they had the right game plan. He just couldn't execute 6 minutes of it. Yazdani was prepared. He just didn't execute. That, in my opinion, that's how I read that. And no, I don't think he expected the double leg, but that's as prepared as I think you can be for David Taylor. Absolutely. For Yazdani. So,
it was similar to like Gilman. He wrestled a darn near perfect match. Mm-hmm. Just
couldn't quite. Just that last little thing. Last one. Karelin or Lopez for Greco supremacy? Mihan, baby.
Yeah, give me Lopez.
Mihan. Listen, one had three, the other had four. He didn't get Ruland. This guy got it done. He's kept Kyle off.
To play devil's advocate, the way Karelin lost to Ruland, it's like atrocious. Now looking back,
it is atrocious. He still lost.
But why didn't he score any points?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the way that he lost is atrocious, but the way that Lopez won was so dominant.
It's like no one can score on this guy. It's just impossible.
Although, you know, without the benefit of forced parterre, you know, who knows? Who knows what Karelin would have been like in this rule set?
Except in 2015.
Do we count this? No, for sure. I mean,
2015 was, hey, the man got paid. You know, good for him.
Yeah, he came back wearing some gold watches.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a weird one. But, you know, it's not the first time that it happened either.
2011?
Yeah, 2011 was the most obvious one.
2016, the celebration dance kind of said it all.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. That's
what real left pregnant, just being in the room for that one. All right, we better go.
Got that whole stadium pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, anyways, pregnancy. Hey, thank you guys so much for tuning in, for listening. Fun show. Ben might be back tomorrow if he's not too jet-lagged from his flight to California. I'll get some shut-eye, Ben. Sleepy Ben might be back, should be back. We can talk a little bit more. What's going on? Any cool content you guys working on? Anything checking in? Anything cool coming today?
More Who's Number One announcements. Ooh. Coming. So
Who's Number One announcements coming? Keep it locked on the site for Junior Worlds content. We've got Junior Worlds going down next week. So Team USA going to try to keep it rolling, right? The cadet team was awesome. Olympic team was great. Junior team ready to rock.
Let's ride this wave.
Let's ride it. Let's ride it all the way in. Thanks, boys. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. See you tomorrow. Have a good Wednesday. Taco time. We out. Better be some sausage.